Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, which can also be found on iTunes. This week, we're going to be talking with a colleague, a friend of mine, and one of my mentors, actually, when I started in the business many years ago, Jennifer Marcinkowski. She currently works with me at my legal staffing firm, J. Hill Staffing Services. And what was interesting was about 3 months ago, I got an email from a listener on LinkedIn saying, Jen, I love your show, and I'm not quite sure what a recruiter is or how and when I should work with recruiters. And that is a very important topic that I wanted to make sure that our listeners understood what recruiters are and when the right time is to use a recruiter. So thank you so much for joining us here today, Jennifer.
Thank you for having me today.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you here. And in addition, just as a reminder to all of our listeners out there, I will be traveling next Monday and the Monday after that, and I'm super excited that Allison Garrido, our favorite guest host, will be on the show and will be hosting for me in my absence. And I do hear she has an amazing guest in store for you next week, Kelly Watson, who's going to be talking about women in leadership. So, Jennifer M., let me start by telling our listeners a little bit about your background. Jennifer Marcinkowski is a native to Los Angeles. She was born and raised in Manhattan Beach and graduated with top honors from ASU while interning for Merrill Lynch. She began her career as a legal recruiter for a Los Angeles staffing firm, where she was responsible for overseeing a litigation support coding center in addition to support staff recruiting. She then spent almost 10 years with a local boutique staffing firm and focused on all facets of legal recruiting with an expertise in placing word processors, legal secretaries, administrative and executive assistants, as well as entry-level candidates and HR professionals. So essentially, she's recruited for pretty much every type of candidate you can imagine. There, she garnered many top achievements, including top producer and most growth awards. She now has more than 15 years of legal recruiting experience in the Los Angeles area, and we're super grateful that you've been on our team now. Is it going on 6 years already?
It'll be 6 years in June.
That's crazy. Yeah. So tell our listeners, how did you get into the field of recruiting? Did you even know what being a recruiter was?
No clue. I had no idea what a recruiter did. Got thrown into it. Thought I wanted to get into marketing and was hired as a marketing assistant for a legal placement agency. After 2 days on the job, they pulled me aside and said, we think you're great on the phones and with the candidate recruits, and would you like to give it a stab? Here I am, 15 plus years later. I love it. It entails everything. It's a bit of sales, a bit of marketing, counseling, HR. It's a little bit of everything, and I think that's what's probably drawn me towards it and why my heart stuck with it for so many years now.
Yeah, and so for those of you out there who might not be familiar, like, what is a recruiter? Can you tell our listeners a little bit about what does a recruiter actually do?
Absolutely. It's twofold in what Jennifer and I do. The first aspect that we do is we career coach candidates to help them find jobs. So let's say you are looking for a career in the Los Angeles area. You would contact us with your resume, and we take a peek at it, see if it might be a good fit for some of our clients, and move forward that way and find out what your salary history is, what areas of location you're open to. What do you look to do in the next 5 or 10 years, and what are your ultimate goals? That's our job as a recruiter, to find that next great fit for you. There's a twofold part, which Jen and I both do as well, and that's finding the right match for our clients. So when we find that right candidate, we have to find that right match for our client. So it's a twofold part. There's the whole, what we call hunting and farming, which I use a lot with our staff. The hunters go out and obtain the business. We go out in sales and pound the pavement and try to acquire new business and get those job orders for our candidates. And then we bring that business into the office and try to find that right match, the right candidate for our clients.
Yeah, and something I really want to be sure to touch on, because I remember, again, when I went out and interviewed for my first recruiting job, it was probably around the same time, about 14, 15 years ago, I remember being so nervous. I called my parents and I said, Mom, Dad, I got a call from this thing called a recruiter. Do I owe them money? And I know that's an often misconception, as I think in the 90s, there was a period of time where you as the job seeker would pay the recruiter to find you a job.
I have heard rumors, and I do believe years ago, and maybe it was more selective recruiting and attorney recruiting, that the recruiters may have charged quite a pretty hefty fee
to the candidates
to find you a job. Ours is free for the candidates. Let me reiterate, it's absolutely free for you to take on a recruiter to have them help you find a job. It is the client that pays us to find that right commodity. And in those terms, you have to be that right profile. And that's what's hard in our job, is to find that perfect cookie cutter candidate that they're looking for that has exactly the right qualifications and that chemistry match that every client's looking for. And so it really is kind of a combination. And we sometimes call it ourselves matchmakers because it's finding that right match for our clients, but also finding the right match for you as the candidate to find the right job and hopefully stay somewhere long term and find a home that you want to go into work every day.
Yeah, it's an interesting double-edged sword being a recruiter, because on the one hand, it's the client company. Most corporations and law firms have a budget to pay recruiters, and I do want to make sure our listeners understand, it does not impact your salary. Because I know I've had a lot of job applicants throughout the years say, well, if I use a recruiter, does that mean your fee, the 10, 15, 20%, whatever that might be, means that I'm going to get that money less in my salary? You know, so essentially, if it was a $10,000 fee, does that mean my salary goes down by $10,000?
Rumors.
I know. So many people are so confused about what a recruiter is and how to work with a recruiter. And so I want our listeners to understand that it should in no way impact your ability to make the amount of money that you deserve. And unfortunately, there are a handful of recruiters out there, just like attorneys, doctors, or anything, that can be good recruiters or bad recruiters. So, Jennifer M., do you want to tell our listeners some of the things to watch out for when working it with a bad recruiter, or what a bad recruiter looks like?
And you will probably experience both, especially being in Los Angeles. There's a lot of recruiters. Jennifer and I specialize in legal, but there's healthcare, there's real estate, there's agencies that specialize solely in recent college graduates. What you want to be careful with are the recruiters that overpromise and underdeliver. I think the one thing that's made us so successful as recruiters is we try not to set up expectations that are unrealistic. So the first day that you're speaking with a recruiter, hopefully you have that heart-to-heart conversation and your recruiter is being realistic with how helpful they may be with your job search. If Jen and I were to get a resume that is strictly healthcare and customer service, to be honest, we may not be the best source for that candidate. We don't always take on attorney positions depending on how busy we are. But that's our job as a recruiter and a good recruiter, to advise you that I'm going to be a great source for you and I'm going to get you some interviews, or we may or may not be the best resource for you and here's some tips or some other agencies that may work for you. That's your number one kind of red flag to watch for, how much they can over or under promise. I also find that there's two types of personalities in recruiting.
Okay.
There's that salesy, aggressive personality. That can work in your favor at times when you really want that job and you want someone to go to bat for you, but you also have to realize that that type of personality can turn people off.
Yeah.
So when you're a recruiter and you're being super pushy with this candidate who has an incredible offer to make, but it could be life-changing, and you've got a pushy recruiter saying, take this job, or don't take this job, it may or may not sit well with you. So it's really a recruiter's responsibility to meet the needs and really feel you and make sure that you're on the same page with that. And it goes twofold on the client side, too. I have a lot of clients that complain that the recruiters they work with are too pushy or too aggressive, and they try to push someone in that is not the right fit, or they get upset because they don't go with a candidate that they feel is the right fit. So you want to try to stay away from someone that may be too aggressive and too salesy. I feel that the passive recruiters could also be to your demise.
It's a fine line.
Correct. So I really think being that happy medium, there's a lot of gray areas in recruiting. But with a recruiter, you don't want someone too aggressive, but at the same time, if you are getting a passive recruiter that doesn't have a lot to share with you,
or doesn't call you regularly,
it's probably not the right match for you. I try to set up, like I said, from the very beginning, expectations the first day. And if it's someone I can help with, I'll let them know I'm going to be a good, you know, source for you. This is what the expectations will be. If it's someone I may not be able to help, I don't want to waste their time and overpromise, and I'll let them know that I may not be the best source. And then there's those middle ones where we have some really great candidates, but we only have those unique opportunities once or twice a year. And that is when it's our job as a recruiter to say, look, I may or may not be able to help you. I'll do my best. I will check in as periodically as I can. And you do me a favor. Why don't you check in with me every 2 to 4 weeks and let me know how the job search is going? And that way you have an open line of communication and you start to develop relationships over the years with some really good, valuable candidates.
I think that's great advice you just gave. There are a couple of other things I want to make sure our listeners understand about, one, bad recruiters. A thing that Jennifer M. and I have seen a lot throughout the years, and any of our competition would tell you as well, is sometimes you'll get a recruiter who will get their hands on your resume via Monster, Indeed, CareerBuilder, etc., and they will send your resume out without permission. Now, you might be thinking, oh, no big deal. Well, here's something really important people don't understand about working with a recruiter. When we represent you, it's like being an agent for a sports athlete. We actually have ownership over your resume for that next year. Oftentimes, it's 6 months. More often, it's a year that we own your resume at that employer, which means you cannot have your resume submitted by another source, by yourself. And that can blow up in your face if you get somebody who's not trustworthy sending your resume out. Because if that a recruiter does not explicitly get your permission to send your resume to company A, B, or C, and then you go to submit yourself, you can get what's known as blacklisted in the industry, because it makes you look incompetent or unorganized if your resume is sent to the same place more than once.
Absolutely. And it's one of our biggest pet peeves as a recruiter. We always get permission, and a good recruiter will always get your permission to submit your resume, period. I don't care how excited I am about wanting to get somebody covered for a position, I will never submit the resume without their permission first. It's the right thing to do. It'll come back to, you know, reward you in the end, and someone will end up with egg on their face later on down the road if there isn't permission given, and the clients do find out, and it ends up reflecting poorly, as you said,
upon your brand. Yeah. It can reflect poorly upon your brand.
Absolutely.
And so you do want to just make sure, to any of our listeners out there, something I suggest in my book or when we're talking with our own job seekers, have an Excel spreadsheet. Who sent your resume? Was it you? Was it J. Hill Staffing? Was it another agency? Did you apply online? And make a note of the date your resume was submitted, the job it was submitted for, and any other important pertinent facts that might be relevant. That way, it doesn't necessarily look bad if it's a huge company like, say, Disney, and you applied through J. Hill Staffing on May 1st, and now they have a new job on November 7th, or whatever the date might be. It's very helpful to reference that and say, hey, I know I applied with you guys on this date, or it's our job as the recruiter to catch that and say, hey, we submitted Bobby for this job. However, Bobby might be better for this new job. And so that's why you want to make sure you have somebody who's organized
Absolutely.
As well and can keep track of that for you.
Absolutely.
Another thing, too, that I want to bring to our listeners' attention, because I feel like there can be some confusion around it. I'm not sure if you remember this, Jennifer M., but there was a time when we both worked at a different boutique staffing agency, and I got ripped a new one by a job seeker. He was making a lot of money, and I was representing him on one job, and he sent me a very nasty email saying, you suck and you're not doing nearly enough work to market me out to your clients. And he wrote this very heated email to my bosses at the time. And what this particular job seeker didn't realize is, A, I would never work with him again after he did that. Mm-hmm. But more importantly is that it's not a recruiter's job to market your resume out. If you have a great relationship with your recruiter, it's something we love to do. We feature candidates on something called our J. Hill's Most Wanted list every month. But it doesn't mean that all recruiters are going to have the time or the wherewithal to market your background to every client they have. So you have to understand, like Jennifer M. started saying, we get jobs in from our clients, and then it's our job to match make the right person with the right job. So you have to just be aware of that sometimes, because I think there's a lot of confusion sometimes.
And expectations.
Yes.
I had a very similar situation at our old agency, too, where I had a disgruntled employee that was upset that I only got him 2 interviews. interviews. And so I asked him, how many other interviews did any other recruiters get him? And guess what his answer was?
Zero.
Zero. So it goes to show you. It's just, you know, some people get in that desperate mode. They're anxious to find a job. And sometimes you are their lifeline. And you really have to, you know, I was going through some notes for today. And we're counselors. We're career consultants. We are matchmakers. We do a little bit of everything. And it's our job sometimes to, you know, have them get a little bit of a reality check. And sometimes it's hard when it's your career, you know, at Fold. You really want to get that right fit, and you want to know that somebody's working for you. And so you have to remind them sometimes that you are. And if they don't feel that you are, ask them if someone else has. And I'm sure you would find very few people that would work as hard as you and I would for candidates. So.
It's about symbiotic relationships. I think it's about the give and the flow. And the most important thing, I think, with any relationship is trust. And if you break a recruiter's trust, you have to be careful, because there literally is a blacklist out there that if people lie on resumes, or they do egregious things, or they lie about having a degree, I do want to let you know that that is something. And you can not only get blacklisted with a particular agency, you can get blacklisted industry-wide. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't realize that they do this, because you are your brand. You are your word and your reputation. Jennifer M., what are some examples of times you've seen that people have gotten blacklisted, or occasions that you can think of?
I'd say the number one mishaps is a resume. Candidates tend to think that they can fudge dates, that they were at an assignment much longer than they were. Unfortunately, you and I have seen a lot of discrepancies with owning a degree. We've recently had a candidate that thought two AA degrees would be equivalent to,
to
one
a bachelor's degree.
I've had recent graduates lie about their GPAs because some qualifications want that 3.5 or higher. And when you come down to that background check, they will find out if your dates are inaccurate. If you did not obtain a degree, they will find out. So that is the number one killer, and there's no way around it. So once you have misled a client or a recruiter, there's really no way around it. And it is a small industry. Every elevator you and I walk into, every recruiter in town, we all know each other. It's pretty hard to dig yourself out of a hole once you've lied on a resume. And the thing is the clients know each other too. There's a lot of legal associations, the legal
or any
community,
association,
and any
community, healthcare,
yes.
Technology. People know one another. Mm-hmm. And you have to keep in mind that it does have an impact. And I think what a lot of people out there don't realize about recruiting agencies, we have a database with about 30,000 names in it. And so if you sent us a resume back in 2010, and now you have a completely different resume here in 2016 where nothing lines up, that's automatically a red flag, and we're not going to be able to represent you.
Absolutely. You know, another thing that I see a lot are candidates being a little bit too casual in their interviews. I've had a lot of feedback this year with candidates maybe not being dressed professionally enough, women being in open, you know, shoes, men wearing tennis shoes to their interview, colored hair, believe it or not, or just not having kempt hair. We've had a couple incidences with alcohol on breath, believe it or not.
Oh, that's right. You're absolutely correct.
There's a lot of instances that you would be very surprised, that you would think would be no-brainers, but that we do. But I would say every single person that comes across our desk before they're in an interview, we will prep you for the interview. But there are a couple of things that we can't prevent you from doing, and that's having a sip of alcohol the night before, or maybe dyeing
the
your
morning
hair purple.
Of. The yes. problem, it's less the night before. I think when we smell it on the person's breath, it might be right before the interview.
If you decide to dye your hair purple, or, you know, create some dreads the night before, sometimes those are questionable things, and a client may wonder, you know, is this professional enough for our environment? There are other clients that welcome it, but I would say to always err with caution and always go in the most professional. And the feedback I've had a lot lately has been the candidates just aren't as professional, or they're not taking it as professionally as they should.
And I think another big one too is running late. It's yes. just there are, when you run late, the best thing you can do, if you are leaving your house and you're supposed to be at an interview, at work, on an assignment, and your assignment starts at 9, and you're leaving the house at 8, and you see it's going to take you an hour and a half, according to Waze, you don't wait until 8:45 or 8:55 to call the recruiter or the employer and tell them, I'm running late. At 8 o'clock, you get in communication and say, there is a chance, I'm intending it's not going to be this way, that I might possibly be 5 minutes late. I wanted to be in communication. I guarantee you you, you will be respected much more by the employer, by the recruiter, by everybody you're interacting with when you're in communication immediately when you know something has come up, rather than waiting until the time of the interview or, God forbid, after the interview.
And acknowledging it when you show up, too. We've had several candidates show up and not acknowledge that they're late. And so the first thing you do when you walk through that door is apologize for being 5, 10, however many minutes late you are. Do not ruin that opportunity to get that interview by not acknowledging the fact that you're late. Because by not acknowledging it, that's already a mark
against you. Absolutely. You're so right. And I will say the reverse of that has happened, where we have had people who have shown up late. They were in communication, and there was somebody recently, in fact, I think it was one of your candidates, was a half hour late, and she still got hired by the client. Mm-hmm. And they absolutely loved her because she was in communication. There was a she thought the interview was at 8:30 instead of 8 o'clock. We were able to salvage it, and she did a great job. She apologized, and they still wound up hiring her. So when you go in late, don't automatically count yourself out. Say, you know what, I'm still going to give it 150%. You're there, you put on your suit or whatever you're wearing to the interview, and still give it 110%.
Absolutely.
So absolutely. Tell some of our listeners, what are the times you would not want to use a recruiter? Are there any examples you can think of times that it wouldn't be appropriate, or who shouldn't use a recruiter?
It's a good question. 10 years ago, I'd say that recent graduates only had your Culver Careers or some places that would want to take a recent college graduate. Now we've been quite successful, and I think one of the most successful agencies at recent college graduates. But I would say if you're looking for a job at Target or Home Depot, maybe customer service, those are all jobs that typically Jen and I have a harder time identifying for, just because those are the type of companies that usually don't utilize our skills. I would also say some of the super high-end positions, typically an attorney with a huge book of business or things like that, sometimes we will let them know that we may not be the best source for them to do that. As much as I want to say we don't do other areas, every time I say we don't do this position, we'll get one in. And the reason being is that Jen and I have all law firm clients, and every law firm client works with a real estate company and works with a nonprofit company and works
or
with
a hospital. And
so we've been getting referrals like crazy the last, 5 or 10 years. That really has allowed us to expand. But typically, if it is something outside of the legal niche and there isn't a ton of stability in what you've been doing, we may not be the best source. And you may want to, dig in on that as well. But I would say super high-end specialty areas and sometimes more of those customer service generic positions that they just don't pay to have agencies use them as often. We're not as successful. You may not want to use one. Also, if you have a referral, obviously you don't need to have an agency, and referrals are our number one key placement. So if you have a friend that works at Disney or X, Y, and Z real estate firm, absolutely go with that referral. People like to use referrals. Referrals are the best. It's a free source typically, or whoever refers you in gets a little bit of a referral placement fee. They're the best way to go. So that's when I would tell everyone, don't use me. If you've got an in or if you've got a friend that works there, go with that referral rather than go through us as a recruiter.
Yeah, that's a great point. And to make it more broad and not just specifically to us at J. Hill Staffing, but for our listeners out there who might be in other countries or other, cities around the world, when you want to use a recruiter is when you have a very specific skill set. Like what Jennifer Marcinkowski just mentioned, are there attorney recruiters out there? Absolutely. I have some great ones I could refer. There are C-level executive recruiters, and there are companies out there that do place warehouse professionals and customer service professionals.
And so, construction.
And construction.
You name it, there's a recruiter for it.
And so first is you have to understand what sort of recruiter you need to connect with and make sure to align yourself with the right sort of recruiter that places your type of person. Secondly, recruiters are not the best resource for everybody. Number one, where recruiters cannot help you is transitioning from field A to transitioning to field B. It's very rare. Over the years, I've gotten some tremendous referrals from different industries who want to make a career change. Most of the time, when a company is paying us a percentage of a person's salary to find them that person, they want exactly what they want tied up with a pretty little red bow. And 99% of the time, we are not allowed to think outside the box.
Correct.
And say, oh, Bob or Sue or Jim is transitioning into this field. How do you feel about that? Now, very rarely we have some amazing relationships with clients, as do all recruiters, where you might be able to think outside the box, but it's highly unusual. So number one would be if you have, you're changing from one field to another. Another one might be, again, if you're new to a field in general, not changing careers, but new to a field without the relevant degrees or certifications, that can be a little bit tricky. Now, a piece of advice I will give to people out there, say that you might be in one of those categories and not the right fit for using a recruiter, what you could do is you could reach out to people on LinkedIn. I tell recent grads this. I tell people who are making career transitions, don't be afraid to call or reach out via email to people on LinkedIn and say, hey, I'm starting in the field. I would love to do some pro bono work for you, to volunteer, to work at a very low rate, and get some exposure to that field. Because the moment you get about 3 to 6 months of relevant experience in any industry for any recruiter you're working with, that automatically makes you more marketable. If somebody comes to us with no bachelor's degree, no certifications, and no work experience, we can't help them. But the minute that person gets 3, 6 months plus of experience, that's where we can start to leverage and help you.
Absolutely.
And so what are some effective ways to work with recruiters? What are recruiters for? Like, what else would you tell me as far as effective ways to work with you as a recruiter?
So I think the number one thing that a recruiter does with their candidates is help with a resume. With the years of experience that we have, typically we can look at a resume and identify what is going to get them that interview or what's going to prevent them from getting that interview. We sometimes see 5-page resumes with someone that has 6 months of experience. It's not necessary. You want a clean, neat, presentable resume, preferably one page. So that's the first thing that we do when we get a candidate, help them with their resume and give them suggestions. If I have time, sometimes I'll even fidget with it, although some of these candidates have better technical skills than I do these days. But that's our first piece of the pie that I think we help the most with, because even if we aren't able to place them, we can still give them some great advice on how to make their resume more successful to help get a job, regardless of who it's with. I also think that a recruiter's there for career advice. We have seen the market at its worst. We've seen it at its best. We have seen offers come in skyrocket high, and we've seen candidates get lowballed. So it's our expertise to let somebody know, look, you're asking for $105K, but you've been making $55K. You're not going to get it, or not through us. We kind of give them that reality check and just career advice. Sometimes people only want to make a move for money. But it's going to be a longer commute. You and I had that situation where I told you a candidate had a commute issue versus career advancement. And so I really let her think about it. And she asked me what I would do, and I gave her the opposite advice on what I wanted her to take. I said, I have kids. I'm all about the commute, but you are looking for career advancement. If I were you, I would take the career advancement job versus the commute. And she did. And it was the right advice, but it wasn't advice where I was pushing her to take it. It was career advice, you know, looking at her career path and what was best for her. So I think our, you know, second job is that career advice, saying, you know what, if you live here, these are the areas of location you're going to be happy at long term. Here's where we're seeing the market for legal secretaries or executive assistants in nonprofits. This is the going range. Here's your expectations. Oh, you only want a 7-hour day? Well, guess what? Only a handful of our firms work on a 7-hour day. I'd say that
education,
90%
yeah,
are 7.5. So it's just educating the candidates on what to expect and what is out there in the market, because no one knows better than we do, because we're in the trenches daily and we're watching the jobs come and go. And pretty fast. The market's been very good to us this year, and it continues to right now. So we're going to keep on plugging away. I also think that we can offer really good referrals into good firms. And this is what I think is the best advice you can get from a recruiter, is you're going to get the inside advice and inside scoop on a position that you are not going to get on your own. Working with these law firms, we know the ins and outs. We know the supervisors for each department. We know if there's a particular position that's had a turnover problem. We know if this firm has the most amazing benefits and the best boss in the world. We know if someone gets their own office with an ocean view. There's just certain things that we know as recruiters that we can help sell or be honest, and help counsel people towards the right position. And if they get that on their own, they're kind of going in blindly.
Yep.
And so we're able to actually prepare our candidates a lot better than the majority of candidates going in are able to on their own. So I definitely think that's another advice. And just having that inside scoop and the ins and outs, I think the candidates really benefit from it. And you and I can, we have a couple scary clients, and we can prepare our candidates and say, look, this lady is going to scare the crap out of you. She does it to everybody. Do not panic.
It's a tactic.
It is. And so it's just nice, because of all of our years of experience, we're able to tell our candidates that, where if someone without any experience threw you at them, or if you got the interview on your own, you would think, oh my gosh, this lady's a nightmare, she hated me, and you just weren't prepared for the interview. So I think that's a really important piece that, you know, comes with what you get as a package with a recruiter. And like you said, this is all free. The resume, the advice, the ins and outs with the law firms. And what I do tell my candidates, whether they get a job through us or through another agency or on their own, they can call me anytime they want. And I will tell them what I know about the client, good, bad, ugly, whatever it is, I'm there because I want them to get the job. Whether it's through me or not through me, I want them to be happy at the end of the day.
That's great. And you're right. I just got a text today from a job seeker who was just having a bad day. And she said, how are things looking? I said, you know, nothing new has come in yet. And she said, can we talk for five? I'm feeling a little bit blue. And by the time we got off the call, she said, you know what? That's why I knew I had to call you, because you just totally lifted my spirits up.
Yeah.
And I think a good recruiter is like a cheerleader and a sounding board. I have so many of both my clients and job seekers where they might get an offer through another agency and they might call you or I to bounce
they
it
do.
Off
they
of
call us for advice.
But yeah, it goes back to trust and respect. And if you want to find a recruiter that you can trust and respect, do your research. The same way that we encourage job seekers to research a company that they're going to interview with, I highly encourage you, Google your, you know, staffing firm, Google your recruiter. For me and Jennifer M, we both have numerous, countless recommendations on LinkedIn. Our company has 5 stars on Yelp.
I was going to say, millennials like Yelp, and that's how we've been getting a lot of the referrals. We've got, you know, great reviews on Yelp.
But it makes a difference, and you can often find out a lot. And it's not to say that it's the end-all be-all. I know, just like Jennifer M and I have just said, you might not be the right match for a certain recruiter. Some personalities, that's a great thing. Like in our agency, we have 6 recruiters, and so we all have slightly different personalities, and you might gravitate more towards one person than another. And it's figuring out who do you mesh with and who can you trust. And going back to what Jennifer M said about the companies, it's interesting. From a recruiter standpoint, really good recruiters almost have an intuitive ability to matchmake. I know Jennifer M and I both have that, where we physically set foot in the office, we place people before, and there are things we could verbally tell you about a firm's culture, and then there are the subtle innuendos and the subtleties of a position that you really understand. Like one of our favorite clients has a view over the ocean, and Jennifer M just made a placement with them. We were out to lunch before we had even started working on the order. She said, I have person A who you would really like because of X and Y, and she just intuitively knew, and sure enough, a month later, that person got hired with that client.
Yep.
And that's something that it's going to be a lot more painful, that recruiters can help you get in the door. Some of the companies, especially the bigger ones and the law firms, don't even have time to sort through resumes, because that's what they're paying us big fees for, is to take the time to screen people and to know their culture and to not waste their time. If you applied blindly to an ad on Monster, Career Builder, Craigslist, etc., you're just putting your resume out into a pile of oblivion, and you may get called and you may not. But when you have a cheerleader who's rooting for you and got your back and knows what you want, it's like having an advocate. It's like a sports guy.
It is. You said cheerleader, but I say cheerleader slash counselor slash everything.
Sports
slash
agent.
Therapist. Really, we take in every single thing that's going on in their life at that time, whether their attorney's throwing a stapler at them, whether they're losing their home. We have candidates that lose their jobs and are sleeping out of their car. I mean, we've heard the worst stories. And the best stories. We've helped people buy homes because we got them huge increases in salary. So it does go both ways. But we are there to listen to them and make them feel comfortable to trust us, because when that offer does come in, they want to trust you. They don't want to think you're just throwing the first offer at them. And so it's important to, you know, get their trust.
Yeah, I think that's very important. So what are some mistakes you've seen candidates make in interviews that are preventable?
Good question. Obviously, coming unprepared. Research before you step foot into an interview. You better have done your research. We always advise candidates to come up with 5 reasons why they would like to work for a company. I think you should read their entire website. I think you should read the ins and outs of the job description and be prepared. Even though we counsel candidates to do this, you'd be so surprised at how many candidates really don't research the company that they're going to work for. Just last week, I had a client say, this girl's resume is all research, but she didn't do any research on her company. You know, and that's egg in our face because really our candidates should know the ins and outs of where we're sending them. And she just didn't. She read, I think, just the first page and that was it. But when they really dug in, you know, to see how much research she had done, it was not a lot. So the number one mistake candidates are making is not researching for the position that they're interviewing for. So not only the job description, but research the firm. Know what their successes are. Know about what the biggest, latest news trends are with their company, what they represent. Just major things like that that you would imagine candidates would do, but they're not doing it. It also goes twofold with presentation, which we were already talking about. Wear that black suit, gray suit, navy, nothing flashy, very simple. I always tell everyone to wear a suit. You can always wear a skirt suit if you want, but I just always recommend wearing a pantsuit. I've never heard a client complain once about a black, gray, or navy suit, so I always tell my candidates, just throw one of those on. And if you get a second interview, you can wear the same suit, just change the top.
Yep.
So for
men
ways,
or women.
Men or women, just change the top and you can add a completely different look or color to your outfit. So those are the easy ways to show up early. But another huge thing candidates do when they walk into an interview is they demand salary. And no matter how many times us as recruiters will tell them, do not give them a number, candidates will still get stuck there and they will give a number. And they'll either come in demanding too high of a number that completely blows them out of the job order, or they sell themselves short and throw a low number down, and then Jen and I will have the hardest time
negotiating
a higher salary for them later. So we always encourage candidates to put that you're open and flexible to any fair offer or to give a wide range. And that way you're not pinpointing yourself to one particular number, because so many candidates blow themselves out by throwing that high number that they wish they could get, or lowballing, say, I'd go as low as this. And that, I will tell you, if you give a lowball number, and this happened to me years ago, and it was with my best buddy, he put a low number there that was his lowball number. When the offer came, they stuck to that number he put on his application, and there was no going back. So be very careful. Whatever you put down there, they may hold you to it. So try to put a range. We always say to put flexible, negotiable.
Mid, low, high.
Exactly.
If you're looking for 75, don't say 75. Say, I'd love to entertain anything in the mid to high 70s or low to mid 70s.
Yeah. And then maybe you and I can get them 78,
yep.
Even though they would take 75. So, yeah, you just always want to keep that, you know, open. An old mistake a lot of candidates made, which I think we've kind of helped them out with, is candidates will go in asking for something else when they're at an interview for a secretary position. They may really want a paralegal opportunity. Or a candidate goes in saying they won't go off to law school, but then in the middle of the interview, they mention that they're going to go off to law school in a year. You need to really be prepared to give the right answers in an interview. And a lot of candidates are shooting themselves in the foot by just giving one quirky answer that may just completely blow them out of the water. So make sure you communicate with your recruiter what your future aspirations are, any hiccups or red flags that may pop up throughout the interview. And we do mock interviews. Jen is probably the very best at it, and Molly in our office is right behind you and a little trainer and bee, but it's really good to role play. And that way you can hear what your candidate answers are going to be. And if they're a little off, that gives you the opportunity to kind of coach them and get back into reality. So that way it doesn't happen in the actual interview. Another thing that I really think that you should do is just be careful with perfumes.
Oh, good one. I was going to say that. Do you remember that interview years ago? Somebody got to a fifth round interview and wore a scented lotion and they were supposed to get an offer.
Turned everyone off. Yeah. And it goes both ways too. I did have an incident 10 years ago with someone that smelled horribly and I had to deal with an HR matter with that as well. So it goes both ways. Make sure you shower before you go into your interview, but also make sure you're not going to wear too heavy of makeup, too heavy of perfume. Anything that anyone might interpret as offensive. You don't want anyone that's sitting around the office to say, who is that Joe Schmo that just walked by and our whole office smells like vanilla bean now, or whatever it may be. You want to just have that subtle, perfect presence, and so you don't want to be overbearing. And if you do really have to wear that perfume, just put it on subtly and maybe a few hours before
or
dinner.
Even just really, guys, avoid the perfume.
Yeah.
I can't tell you, even scented lotion for men or for women, those things, could you imagine your dream job is at your fingertips and it was because of your scented cologne, lotion, what have you, lost you the job. And no joke, Jennifer M. and I have both seen that happen numerous times throughout the years, no matter how many times we coach people not to wear anything.
Yeah. And then another thing I'm seeing a lot of, this is more with the millennials, but people are taking calls.
In the interview?
Either in the interview or in the lobby when you are waiting to be seated. Your first interview is that receptionist, and they are checking you out. So if you are fidgeting with a bunch of documents and you're taking calls and you're disheveled, that's your first impression in that office. And if that receptionist has any type of relationship with HR, they can give a thumbs up or thumbs down. Our old receptionist at Jen and my old agency was awesome. He would give me a thumbs up or down, and I would know right off the bat if I had a winner or someone that I was going to have to work with. And I've noticed with a lot of the millennials, they check the phones a lot, put everything away and be ready to go. And I've also had candidates that are not millennials that are just disheveled and going through hundreds of papers or trying to get their references and resumes together in their folder in the lobby. Don't do it. Do it in your car. Once you get up into that reception area, your interview is on. You don't know who's watching you, who's walking by. It could be a main partner, a managing partner.
The person you're interviewing with,
right.
Even in the elevator.
Know. Even in the elevator, I was just going to say. So the second you're out of that car, the professionalism goes on. Don't be...
Or even driving into the parking garage. Did you see that meme that went out a while ago of that guy who got honked at, and it turned out the candidate who honked at him and called him an a-hole was the person who was interviewing for a job.
Him. Correct. Yes. So you just never know. We always say we run into people in the elevators. But I would say those four things are probably the biggest boo-boos that people do when they walk into interviews. And of course, this is a no-brainer to you and I, but please bring 3 clean copies of your resume. I don't know how many people will say, I forgot to print out copies of my resume. Just the second you print one out, print like 50. And that way you just have plenty to hand out when needed. That way you're not, if you get a last minute interview, you're not running
scrambling, your printer breaks.
Yeah, just have them ready to go. I hear a lot of clients saying they just weren't prepared. They didn't even have a resume, or I wanted to bring them forward to meet with the next managing partner, but they only had 1 or 2 resumes at hand. So just bring, 3 to 5 copies with you and be prepared. I think that's my number one piece of advice, is to be prepared. I think if you go in there being prepared and you've done your research with the company and the position, you're going to just walk in feeling a lot more confident.
Yeah, so true. And the final touch on the interviewing side that I know you and I have both experienced is the thank you note. We have seen people lose so many offers over the thank you note. Years ago, a millennial had went through 5 rounds of interviews and finished with an interview with the CEO of a major Fortune 500 company who was not easy to impress. She got the offer while she was in the interview. She went home. She sent him a thank you note. Thank you, Mr. CEO! !! So happy that you offered me the job! Emoticon, happy face. I'm so excited to be a part of your team!
Kiss!
Kid you not, they actually rescinded the job offer. But more commonly, and that was years ago before emoticons were even as popular of a thing, more recently we've seen on numerous occasions people will misspell the company or the contact
name. That's what I was just going to say. The company and contact names are misspelled, I'd say 50% of the time, or they just mix the two up and it looks so unprofessional. So our number 1 piece of advice, all of our candidates, before they send that thank you letter, they have to run it by Jen, myself, or their recruiter first. And I'm telling you, we keep it simple, sweet, and to the point. If someone has run-on sentences or more than a paragraph, I tell them to just please keep it simple. Less is more in a thank you letter, because they are looking, that's your final interview. They're looking for that one grammatical error, that one run-on sentence, anything they can find before they make that final decision. So less is more, keep it simple, run it by your recruiter, make sure the spellings of their name is correct. And you should be good to go. And last but not least, one thing I did not bring up where candidates are really, really, really not doing their job in an interview is providing examples. And that's a huge thing with Jen. If you guys read her book or you forget prepped, you've got to provide evidence. You don't just say, I'm organized. You should say, I'm organized. And here's an example. I took this filing system at X, Y, and Z law firm, and I brought it from a manual, unorganized system to electronic filing system within 6 months. Another example of my organizational skills are I took our office, which was a complete disaster, and reorganized it, and everyone's computers are set up, and now we have a testing station. Whatever it may be, give an example. Don't just say, I'm always happy or I'm always organized. Back up evidence. And like Jen always uses as an example, if you're going to court and you're going to go up against these big attorneys, you're not just going to say, I'm not guilty. You're going to say, I'm not guilty, and here's all the evidence why I'm not guilty.
No attorney can win
and
the case.
And vice versa. A prosecutor's going to do the same thing and say, you're guilty, and here's the evidence as to why you're guilty. So if you're going to tell them, I'm impeccably organized, or I'm really savvy with this program, whatever it is that you're giving to them, you better be prepared to provide an example. They don't usually ask questions after that, and it usually brings the interview very smoothly and into the next, you know, part of the question. And I think it usually answers their question, too. So
I'm happy you brought that up. Yeah. That's brilliant. We've given our listeners a lot of wonderful tips and a better understanding and picture of what it is recruiters do and what recruiters, how they can help you and what they might not be as good for. Any last recommendations of anything that you would say that helps create symbiotic, healthy partnerships to work with a recruiter?
My number one advice is to probably be very kind to your recruiter. We get hundreds and hundreds of resumes in a day, and if I do a mass emailer, we're talking, you know, up to 1,000 emails, and Jen sometimes maxes out her email incoming and outgoing emails. So don't be too aggressive. I think that the nice thing about our agency and why we are so successful is we aren't overly aggressive. We are real, we're understanding, we're normal people. So start off the relationship good. And like I said, set up the expectations from day one. And I think if both of you are on the same page from day one, you'll find that there's a lot less heartache later. The other thing I do tell my candidates, I'm really honest. I am not the best always at getting back to everybody right away, but I always will respond to an email quickly. Sometimes the turnaround time is a day if it's just them checking in. If it's urgent, you have an interview or something that's, you know, a relative matter, of course you're going to get the ASAP call. But if it's just a check-in, it may take a day, and just have that patience, or shoot me an email. I'll always respond back and keep you in mind. And openly communicate with your recruiter.
Yes.
We don't like surprises. So if, you know, we've got you up for a job or two, and, you know, this other agency out of the blue starts having you up for a couple more jobs, just communicate that to us. We're not going to be mad. We want you to get the job, but let us know so we can prepare to let our clients know.
So you don't burn bridges.
Yeah, we may need to negotiate more money down the road. It may come down to hours with a position. So just keep your recruiter updated. If you've changed your mind about a position, don't be afraid to call your recruiter. Even if you've accepted a job and you don't want it, don't be afraid to call your recruiter. You should have a good enough relationship with your recruiter.
And trust and respect.
Yes, and I will say the one thing that I do think has kept me around all these years is I've never held a grudge. You cannot hold a grudge for what a candidate's going to do. It's their life and it's their career, and I want everyone to have a successful career and be happy. And God forbid, I would never want to make a decision for somebody and have them regret it, because it would be on me. Yeah. And I think that's what makes us successful and usually makes us the right matchmakers.
I love what you just said. That's so brilliant, because I think in all aspects of life, for any of you who have tuned in to other shows in the past, great communication is the foundation for a happy, successful life. And so we've had candidates ghost us in the past, you know, where they won't return calls or texts, and we've had to call family members to make sure they're not dead on the side of a street. We don't mind. If you got another job, we are delighted. We'll be the first ones to pat you on the back and congratulate you. And you can get blacklisted if you stop communicating with your recruiter, or you ghost them, or don't show up to an interview. So just remember, it's okay to be in communication with your recruiter, texting, emailing, phone calls, whatever works for you.
And texting's huge these days. 5 years ago, we were like, no, 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 that's a big no-no. It's changed. Just like recruiting 15 years ago, we were faxing over resumes. Now it's emailing. You know, it's a sign of the times, and things have changed, and sometimes it is quicker for someone to respond quickly, you know, by a text. So I'd say we're pretty up to par with the technology, you know, being pretty savvy and responsive that way with candidates. And I think they prefer that as well, especially some of the new millennials that we work a lot with.
Awesome. Well, it's been great advice, Jennifer M. I'm so happy you've been on the show. And I'd like to actually, depending on how much time we have on future shows, I may do this every now and again. I had a great email from a listener out there, John, who had some feedback about last week's show. And last week, if you recall, my husband, Ian Andes, was on the show. John had some feedback that at points during the show, it got a little bit giddy and too light, and it didn't get as professional. So I did want to address John's email and let our listeners know that I knew it was a risk having my husband on the show. And I thought it was a worthwhile endeavor to have him on because of his many years, decades of business experience. I also wanted to invite our listeners. I know that so often I have these amazing guests on, and we don't normally have a call-in format, but what I did want to offer to any of our listeners out there, like John or anybody else who might have feedback or a question that you haven't heard us address on the air, you are more than welcome to email me at info@stophopingstarthunting.com, which is the name of my book. So again, that's info@stophopingstarthunting.com. And if you ever have a question or a comment, John sent me a follow-up email I'll share with you right now. And he said, Jen, you know, I have another question for you. He was considering a relocation to be closer to his daughter. And he said, what should I do? I've recently gotten to comedy writing and screenwriting, and I love it, and it's my passion, but then I'm going to give up a six-figure-a-year job. And so this answer is specifically for John. It's easier to talk than write this sometimes. I will tell you that passion and doing something you love when you get out of bed every day is priceless. And I've seen so many people successfully transition from one career into another. In fact, John, in case you missed the show, ironically with another John, Dr. John Rubinow, a couple of weeks ago, he talked about the same thing. He gave up a career as a doctor to become a professional voiceover actor. And so sometimes you may have to make certain concessions to transition into a new career. And never give up your passion. To find something you truly love and are passionate about is priceless. So that's our feedback today for our listener, John, who had written in. And anybody who wants to write in the future, you're certainly welcome to do so. And if we have time at the end of the show, we'll be happy to answer any questions. And tune in next week. Again, Allison Garrido will be guest hosting while I'm traveling with Kelly Watson, who's going to be talking about women in leadership. And if you ever miss the show live, you can always find us on iTunes at Get Yourself the Job on iTunes, or you can find us on the archive of the LA Talk Radio website. Thank you so much for being here today, Jennifer Marcinkowski.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in. Have a wonderful rest of your week. And since I won't be here, a happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, happy holidays.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.